ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
प्रशासम सुस्थदारहनम परित्यागतम इवालंग्या प्रेम अभिवलचेतसः.
They offered Balaram profuse benedictions and then glorified him who deserves all glorification. Their minds overwhelmed with ecstatic love, they embraced him
as if he had come back from the dead. Pape pralambe nihate Deva Parama Nivritha Abhyavarshan Balamalyai Sashamsu Sadhu Sadvati. The sinful Pralamba, having been killed, the demigods felt extremely happy, and they showered flower garlands upon Lord Balaram and praised the excellence of his deed. Thus end the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 18th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Lord Balaram Slays the Demon Pralamba.
Om Agyan Timirandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Remembering the actual situation, the fearless Balaram understood that the demon was trying to kidnap him and take him away from his companions. The Lord then became furious and struck the demon's head with his hard fist, just as Indra, the king of the demigods, strikes a mountain with his thunderbolt weapon. Pralamba Sura, this terrible, terrible demon, with all horrible intentions, he has come to Vrindavan to destroy Krishna and Balaram, and thus to kill the very life force of all the Brijbasis, all the devotees. Knowing that by destroying Krishna means to destroy all the Vaishnavas. Just like, you know, by watering the root of a tree, you nourish the whole tree. But if you somehow just water a leaf or a branch, the whole tree will be suffering due to no nourishment. But similarly, if you cut off a leaf or a branch from the tree will go on surviving. All other parts, they may have little less companionship, but they will go on. But if you cut the root of the whole tree will die. So in this way, a devotee is always trying to water the root. By the glorification of Krishna, by hearing and chanting his holy names, by offering service unto his lotus feet, we are watering the root of the tree of life, Sri Krishna. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matta sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita
Krishna says, knowing me to be the source of everything, the root of all existence, the wise engage in my devotional service and worship me with love. But do not think that the demoniac does not know this philosophy also. They know that if they can somehow or other destroy the root, then the whole tree will die. And how do they try to destroy the root in this day and age? Because, you see, we are all connected to Krishna, the root of all existence, through faith and devotion. When someone tries to disturb our faith, we should know that they are taking the axe of, of this demoniac weapon of ignorance and doubt. And they are, they are directly inflicting the very root of our whole spirituality, our faith in Guru and Krishna. And this is why it is said in the Shastra that to blaspheme a devotee is the greatest of all offenses. Because when someone hears the blasphemy of a devotee, what takes place is his faith in Krishna, his faith in his relationship with Krishna is shaken. And it could even be destroyed. Which means the root of the tree of our spiritual life has been killed. And therefore, without a healthy root, healthy roots within a tree, not only will the tree die, but what expectation of any fruits can we possibly hope for from such a tree? It is not possible. So therefore, a devotee must be very, very conscious and very careful to protect one's faith by all means from the demoniac attacks of the Pralambasuras of this world. When we say the Pralambasuras of this world, in this sense, we can compare Pralambasura to all atheistic or sub-religious propaganda or envious propaganda that is trying to strike at the root of our very spiritual existence, our faith in God. So much scientific propaganda. Poor children, they're sent to school and they're taught in so many indirect ways that there is no God. I remember when I went to school, just elementary school, you're just a young little boy and you're just curious to learn as much as you can about everything. Your mind is open, your heart is open, you're willing to just accept anything anyone tells you because you don't have any preconceived ideas. Your mind is like a blank slate. Whatever anyone writes on it, it's there. And I remember science class, they're not allowed to say there is a God. And they're not allowed to say there is not a God because of the secular principles of the educational system. But they explain all these purely atheistic theories of creation by which, without denying or accepting God, if you listen to it, automatically you have to come to the conclusion that there is absolutely no place for a god, according to what is being said. And you accept it as a fact. And ultimately, it is not just an accident, but it is terrible, malicious, demoniac people who are under the influence of Rakshasas who are creating these scientific theories just to strike terror into the very root of religion, faith in God. It is not just some scientists who just do not have proper understanding of Shastra. It is a very systematic attack at the very heart of spirituality. Why? Because without God, there are no moral principles. Moral principles are superficial, have no real dignity or substance without acceptance of the soul in God. Because ultimately, if there's no soul and there's no God, then really what difference does it make what you do? It's just the question of one's relative taste. Huh? Some people think, oh, we should be moral, we should be good, we should be nice people. Do unto others as we will do to you. As we want you to do to me. Huh? This is the golden rule, even amongst the atheists. But what substance does such a philosophy have? Because if someone gets pleasure out of killing you, why not? Someone else gets pleasure out of doing nice for you. Some people gets pleasure out of giving in charity. Another person gets pleasure out of showing his might and power and destroying the innocent masses. Who's right and who's wrong? The moralists say we're right. The immoralists say that they're right. Who's to judge? There is no God. There is no soul. Whatever you think is all right. You're all right. I'm all right. In this way, because there is no philosophy, there is no substance, there is no basis, there is no supreme judge, morality, so-called morality, is built upon such a shaky foundation. In fact, there's no foundation. And when you destroy the principles of morality, then people have no control of their mind, people have no control of their senses, and then you can exploit them, you can control them. You can exert your egoistic power to extremes, and the innocent masses think everything is very nice. Just see. We have a new road built through our town. Everything is very nice. We have enough food today. Everything is very nice. Keep the masses in total ignorance so you can exploit, control them. This is the mentality of demons. And the whole scientific theories, factually, are systematic, well-planned-out, devised programs to keep the masses in ignorance, to shake their faith in God. Even the religious people, they don't even really believe because they've heard all of these arguments. They'll sentimentally say, oh yes, God, very nice. But they have no power to overcome the onslaughts of Maya or the senses or the exploitation of others because they really do not have much faith. It's a superficial, sentimental, fanatic faith. But philosophically, their minds are polluted. The very root of their connection with God has been stricken, practically dead. And this is why our Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, this is why he was so keen to spend so much time to defeat these scientific atheistic arguments. So much in his books, so many times in his morning walks, he would bring up this subject of the scientific theories that there is no soul, that life comes from matter, the process of creation. And sometimes we would think, so what? Why is he spending so much time on defeating these scientific arguments? There's so many, why not discuss Krishna's Leela more? The reason is he well knew that these arguments are very, very demoniacally devised by terrible rakshasas to destroy religion in the world. You destroy religion by destroying faith. And similarly, according to the Shastra, it is said that if someone blasphemes a Vaishnav, there are three procedures of how to react. One is you must cut out the person's tongue. And then commit suicide. Kill yourself. That's one choice. Twofold. The other is get out. Run for your life. Don't hear another word or you're finished. This person is striking the very root of your religious life. Because factually, you cannot separate Krishna from his devotees. The devotees of the Lord are manifesting Krishna in this world. And if we lose our faith in great devotees, Krishna will not allow us to remain having faith in him. The guru is the representative of Krishna. What you do to the representative is what you do to who he's representing. So it's very serious. It's very severe. Therefore, the Shastras deal with it so severely. This is no joke. If someone blasphemes a Vaishnava, cut out his tongue, then kill yourself. You cut out his tongue so he'll not destroy anyone else's spiritual life like he's just already destroyed yours. And since you're finished, there's no use living any more. Human life is meant for self-realization. Now it's spoiled. Kill yourself. Otherwise, before he gets even one syllable more out, get out. Don't feel embarrassed. Hold your ears. Start crying out, Vishnu, Vishnu, and run. Or defeat him. That is the best thing. If you can soundly defeat that person, that is first class. Of course, Srila Prabhupada explained that for preaching purposes, the first thing we do not do. After all, if we become known as the movement that cuts people's tongues out and commits suicide, the Sankirtan movement will become much more controversial than it already is. So therefore, this is forbidden in this age. But the spirit should be understood. The spirit of this should be taken in context of how serious it is to get out, not to listen, or to defeat that person. Why? Because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught that the bhakti lata bij, the seed of devotion, it is being planted by the spiritual master and by the great Vaishnavas in our heart. And we must carefully protect that seed by following the four regulative principles. And we must water that seed by every day hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, by every day attentively chanting Harinam, Japa, by regularly coming to the beautiful Sankirtan, congregational chanting of the holy name. Japa is of utmost importance. But the congregational chanting is of the same utmost importance. Sometimes we think that because I'm doing my japa, I am getting holy name, therefore there's no need for all this dancing, chanting, and all these other things. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is a yuga avatar, what did he stress more than anything else? The congregational chanting of the holy name. Every morning his devotees would rise and chant japa. But then, throughout the night, they would be beautifully, gracefully dancing, echoing with their combined voices the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. I was recently asked, which is more important, attending the Sankirtan or chanting japa? My reply is, which is more important for your health, eating or sleeping? They are both absolutely essential. So by hearing, by chanting, by serving the Vaishnavas, by serving the deities, by engaging in the nine processes of devotional service, by remembering the Lord, offering prayers to the Lord, this is watering that seed of bhakti that is within our heart. And as we water year after year after year, you know, a tree does not grow instantly. The first thing a gardener must cultivate within his own heart is patience. If you plant a seed, you cannot expect that fruits are going to come within days. It will take years. You have to continuously keep it watered and protect it. Little by little, it becomes a little sapling, and then it becomes first a little sprout, and then a little tiny tree, and then it becomes little stronger, little stronger. After it's fully developed, fruits begin to ripe, little fruits begin to come as seeds. And then it takes sometimes months for that fruit to become ripe. So if you want to be a gardener, you have to be very, very, very patient, but very diligent. Rupa Goswami says, enthusiasm, determination, and patience are required on the path of spiritual life. But after so many years of trying to develop this tree, trying to cultivate an atmosphere where the sweet fruit of prema bhakti, love of God, will ripen, we must know that Maya has so many of her agents in this world that want to come right in and just cause havoc to the very root of that tree by destroying our faith. Faith in God, faith in Guru, faith in the Vaishnavas. They want to take Krishna away from us. Because if they know, if they can hurt our faith, spiritually we are dead. Just like Pralambasura knew, Krishna is very powerful. I cannot defeat him. But Balaram, hopefully I will defeat him and I will kill him. And if I kill Balaram, then Krishna will not even care to live. What to speak? And if Krishna doesn't care to live, everyone will die in separation. All the Vaishnavas worldwide, they will all die. They cannot live without Krishna. This was his mentality. And we see how Balaram, who was the original spiritual master, responded with this demon. He became, it is explained, he became furious and struck the demon's head. Balaramji did not become furious simply because he was trying to kill him, because after all, Balaram is the immortal, eternal God. Can anyone destroy? But whatever Krishna does, whatever Balaram does, is with the mind of what is best for his devotees. Krishna lives for his devotees, and the devotees live for Krishna. Obviously, besides seeing this person's envious mentality, Balaram is thinking, he's taking me away from my companions. What's going to happen to my companions? Therefore, he became furious. And similarly, if anyone tries to strike at the root, to strike at the Krishna within our heart, by disturbing that faith, we should become like Balaram. We should become furious. Not only furious, but we should attack the demon's head with hard fists. Huh? It's very strong language. But do you know what Prabhupada used to say about the scientists? I kick their heads with my boot. He was in the mood of Balaram, because he's the original spiritual master. Huh? Balaram is the original guru. And what is he doing to people trying to disturb faith? He's, with his hard fist, he's cracking their heads. And here's the personification, the manifestation of Balaram in this world, the spiritual master. And he's saying the same thing. That these people trying to ruin people's faith, trying to take Krishna out of their lives, with atheistic propaganda, he said, I kick their face with my boot. Sri Galim, how many times did Prabhupada say that? Almost any time he talked about these rascals, he couldn't help but saying that. Of course, for preaching purposes, he never literally kicked anyone's head with their boot, which is, he never even wore boots as far as I know. In this way, Prabhupada was simply showing the mood of Balaram. His boot meant his strong philosophical convictions to defeat their philosophy. The boot he's talking about, or the spiritual masters, Balaram used his hard fist. The representative of Balaram, his boot or his fist, is in the form of his words. Strong words, hard words. Not just sentimental, oh yes, you're all right, I'm all right, you can believe anything you want, it's all right. Okay? Very strong words. To destroy this demon of doubt from coming into our lives. In fact, Arjuna, he told Krishna that doubt is like a demon. In fact, it's the greatest demon there is. A physical demon, what can he do to you? He can put you in prison, he can beat you, and he can kill your body, which has to die anyway. But really, there's no loss. As long as you have faith in Krishna, you're going back to Godhead. But doubt separates you from Krishna. Doubt takes Krishna away from us. Therefore, there is no greater, more inimical and dangerous demon in all the world than doubt. We're not afraid of Hitler's. We're not afraid of Saddam Hussein's. We're not afraid of Jack the Ripper and all these murderous, terrible people in the world, crazy people. We're not afraid of demons who have big, big nuclear bombs at their disposal. Because today or tomorrow the body is going to die. But they can never take Krishna away from us. Huh? But doubt separates us from God. Therefore, Arjuna approached Krishna as Madhusudana. You have killed the great demon Madhu. And what was the special feature of this demon Madhu? Madhu, at the beginning of creation, came and stole the Vedas from Brahma. He stole all transcendental knowledge from Lord Brahma. Without knowledge, we cannot defend ourselves from doubt. Without knowledge, without Veda, you cannot spiritually survive. So this demon Madhu was a terrible demon. He knew that if he steals the Vedas, then there will be total godlessness, confusion and doubt in everyone's mind. So Madhu was the personification of the demon of doubt, because he was taking away knowledge. Without knowledge, there is simply doubt. And the Lord incarnated as Hayagriva and slayed this terrible demon and brought the Vedas back to Brahma, who's the original guru, who disseminated that knowledge to all of us through parampara. So Arjuna approached Krishna as Madhusudana. Please, Krishna, please kill this demon of doubt that is trying to take away my knowledge of you, trying to separate me from you. And it is a fact. Doubt is the supreme demon of this world. And there is only one power that can destroy this demon of doubt, and that is faith. Rupa Goswami explains that faith comes by hearing submissively from authorized Vaishnava devotees of the Lord. And if we don't have faith in Guru and the Vaishnavas, then we cannot hear submissively. Then the demon of doubt has complete power to control and exploit us. Huh? Therefore, in the mood of the cowherd boys, we must ever take shelter of the hard fist, of the boot, of the divine words of our spiritual master, to keep these demons of doubts away from our minds. It is very essential. It is the basic principle by which we can develop in our Krishna consciousness. By hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord and not listening to anything contrary to that. When we talk about the glories of the Lord, the Srimad Bhagavatam of all scriptures is the most important. And practically speaking, most of Srimad Bhagavatam is not speaking of Krishna, but it is speaking of Krishna's devotees. Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, Shukadev Maharaj, Narad Maharaj, Ambarish Maharaj. So many wonderful stories about the Lord's devotees. The more we have faith in their words and in the words of those guru and sadhus who are representing them, the more the devotional seed is watered and grows. So we must be very, very diligent to regularly hear and chant the glories of the Lord, and by the mercy of the spiritual master, learn from him how to protect the very root of our faith. Just like Srila Prabhupada would sometimes say, don't read other books. What is this, fanatical or what? No. It's the hard fist of Balaram trying to protect our faith from doubt and unscrupulous philosophies. We don't even know what they're talking about. Huh? We have to be very careful. whatever we do in our spiritual development should be under the authority and blessings of the great souls. We should not depart from the blessings of the great souls, because if we do, we do not know. We may be making friends with that sweet-looking, beautiful little cowherd boy of the name Pralambasura. Hare Krishna. Is there any questions?
Shri Radha Gopinath ji ki. Maharaj, you are talking about these doubts. We have been told that if we want to surrender to Krishna, we have to surrender to the spiritual master, to the utmost. And by surrendering to the utmost to a spiritual master, we can please Krishna and get his mercy. Now, this surrendering is not a, so to say, a single thing. It's a surrendering at every moment. Now, we have to spend at least in our lifetime, at least 20, 30 years, whatever is our life, we have to surrender to a spiritual master to the utmost. Now, this always, there is a faith has been getting disturbed from outsiders, and that faith we used to fight it out by whatever we have said, that we will just go away from there at the utmost. But sometimes our mind used to disturb us a lot by disturbing our faith, and there we cannot go out from there so easily. These minds disturb us to that extent that the doubts used to come up so much high that it is very difficult even to come to our higher authorities or to the spiritual master itself to clear out the doubts, having that fear in our mind that what he will be thinking about me and what type of a thing he will feel, it that I am considered such a good person, and when I'll say these things to him, he will feel it that I am not a neophyte altogether. So at that time, that doubt is becoming so strong that it is disturbing our whole spiritual life. And whatever the surrender attitude which we have, it that attitude is completely going away from us. In that circumstance, what should we do?
That is why it is said, pride cometh before the fall. Because of this pride that we do not want to reveal ourselves as neophytes, we do not reveal our minds. We want to appear very advanced. And because we allow those demons of doubts to remain in our minds by not exposing them, ultimately they kill us. Ultimately we lose our faith and we can fall down. So what is the solution to the doubts in our mind? You have to give up your proud ways. You have to admit that I am a neophyte devotee. And you must approach people who have faith. And you must inquire submissively from them. You must reveal your mind in confidence to them, with a longing, with a desire, that their divine words will bring my consciousness back to a condition of faith. By hearing in the association of devotees, and by inquiring submissively in the association of devotees, in a humble state of mind, Krishna will arrange through the words of the Vaishnavas to maintain your spiritual life and to protect you from these demons of doubts. Therefore, the answer to your question is you must have regular association with people who have faith, with people who are convinced, and hear from them, and inquire from them. If you do that, Krishna will definitely protect you at all stages. Maya will harass you in the form of all these mental conditions, but she cannot take you away from Krishna's service as long as you have a humble, respectful relationship with devotees of the Lord. But when we become proud and think, oh, I know better, or I don't want people to think I'm a neophyte, then that pride itself immunes you from the proper medicine, sadhu satsang.
Doubt is dispelled by hearing submissively from faithful persons. And doubt is nourished by hearing submissively from unfaithful persons.
Maharaj, what must be the attitude of a person whom Krishna has placed in a career of science, who has to teach science and who has to administer science? What must be his attitude?
Because his attitude should be what the original founders of Western science was. In Eastern, all scientists were great sages and rishis. In the Western world, science began with ministers. Galileo, Isaac Newton, they were very religious men. They were men of the church. So what was their whole idea of science? That God is great, that God is the creator, the maintainer, the destroyer of everything. The more everything in this creation is running and operating by the grace of God. He is the supreme master brain who has created and controlled all of this. The more we study, the more we can understand intricately just how wonderful God is. The more details we have of how this creation is working, the more we can understand God is really a tremendous creator. Just like if you have a computer. When you just look at it superficially, you think, oh, IBM has done nicely. But the more you go into it and study each little part, each little circuit, each little transistor or whatever, the more you realize, my God, this IBM, they're really geniuses. Look at how they've done all this. Huh? So similarly, we accept God has done it, but the more we intricately see how, look, we see this table, God has created it, very nice. But we look at it under a microscope, and there's all sorts of little molecules, and then there's little atoms, and then there's electrons, and there's neutrons, and how they're bouncing, and how they're doing like this. God is created like this. My God, this is not just a table. This is an entire creation in itself. Huh? So they wanted to analyze material nature simply for the further glorification of God. But what happened is, like anything good, when it gets in the hands of unscrupulous demoniac people, they use it for the wrong purpose. Religion itself is like this. Religion itself is meant to bring peace, love, and compassion. But when it's in the wrong hands, it brings violence, hatred, sectarianism. So these wonderful, virtuous motives of the original scientists came into the hands of demons. And they wanted to promote atheism. They wanted to use their studies and investigations to prove that there's really no need for God. Even if there is a God, there's really no need for him. Right? A more cunning way of destroying people's faith. So what should be the proper understanding of a scientist today? There is a need for Krishna conscious scientists who are willing to glorify God through scientific investigations, scientific in experimentation, and scientific evidence. Like everything, every form of knowledge is meant to glorify God ultimately. In fact, Srila Prabhupada instituted this Bhaktivedanta Institute. Most of these people had PhDs in science. He told them, glorify God through science and expose the fallacies of these atheistic theories in science.
Any other questions?
Yes.
The Vedic culture and faith in the Brahmana.
Say that again.
Prabhupada said that Darwin's theory, Darwin created this theory of evolution directly to destroy faith in the Vedas. Of course, it also destroys faith in the Bible, but it was created for that one purpose, to destroy faith in the Vedic tradition. Because in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes the divine and demoniac natures. And at the end of the chapter, he says, Yashastravidim utsritsya vartate kamakaratak, that those who give up shastra, Yashastravidim utsritsya means to give up, nasa siddhim avapnoti nasukham naparamgatim, there's no perfection, there's no happiness, and there's no supreme destination. So this modern educational institution here in India is the effect of the British. The British attacked the faith in Vedic knowledge and the Brahmana. They did more than just conquer the country. They destroyed faith in Vedic knowledge. And therefore these young children outside here, they're just taking to Western ways with no knowledge of the next life. And they're all preparing for hellish life in the next life. So that is the effect of this British domination, was that they destroyed this faith in the Brahmana and Vedic knowledge. Prabhupada gave one lecture on that.
In the name of nationalism. We're taking the ways, the means, the processes from a foreign power that has come simply to destroy the culture of the Vedic civilization. And we're thinking their ways are the highest because they are secular. Huh? Secular is all right if you understand it in its true sense. Follow your religion as it is. But this westernized British form of secularism, as Prabhupada and Sri Galim were just saying, it was specifically orchestrated and designed to destroy the Vedic culture. And it was instituted here for that purpose only. The British sent so many Indologists to study Sanskrit scrutinizingly for years to translate the Vedas. And do you know, I have seen the notes. They have been published. The notes and the diaries of these Indologists, like Max Müller and others. You know what they say in their notes? They're writing letters to people back in Britain that their only purpose of doing all this translation is to translate it in such a way to destroy everyone's faith in the Vedas so we can convert them to be good Englishmen and Christians. And of course, their idea of Christians was not like Jesus. Their idea of Christians means you're just sold out to the British Empire and you do things their way. And yet, you go to colleges all over the world, especially here in India. And what do they teach in the name of the Vedas? The translations of these British Indologists, whose only purpose was to destroy faith in Vedic culture. And as Sri Galim was saying, I have also heard Prabhupada talking like this, that Charles Darwin was specifically petitioned to do this, to destroy faith in the Vedic culture. On all sides, they were trying to attack. Srila Prabhupada used to explain, when he used to go to school in British and Scottish schools, they would preach so much atheism against Vedic culture in such an indirect way. And this is the system that we're accepting as the highest, most open-minded secular system. This is how demonic energy is so subtly just creeping into every aspect of our lives to control it and destroy faith in God. And these young people in school, what type of faith in God do they have? These college students, what type of faith in God do they have? It's all meddled, it's all messed up, it's all confused. Most of them really don't have any faith at all. And we think, oh, it's just the times. No. They are victims of this whole system of demoniac propaganda. That is why Srila Prabhupada called public school systems spiritual slaughterhouses. Because they are owned, because the whole system, the teachers don't even know it. They just think, oh, this is modern education. This is handed down to us. But what is the cause of it? What is the source of it? What was the motive behind it? To destroy faith in God, to destroy Vedic culture, to destroy faith in the Shastras. Very, very dangerous. And why were the British so much concerned with destroying the Vedic culture? Because they knew it was the most powerful spiritual culture in the world. And unless you destroy that culture, you cannot control and exploit. In fact, the Russian government, when the Soviet Union was a communist state, they said the greatest threat to communism was the Hare Krishna movement. Because they could easily, through their communist propaganda, defeat any other religious philosophy. But they understood, an intelligent mind who applies themselves to Prabhupada's books, that person becomes completely independent from our propaganda. We cannot control such a person. Therefore, they're greatly threatened.
Actually, we can understand what is right or wrong, but what choice we parents have when one side we say that what school they are teaching is wrong, and we, as a parents, we force them to go to such a school, and we are supposed to teach them Krishna consciousness the other side. The only thing in the bargain, the children are losing so many because they are drifted from one side because of what is going in society, and other side, the parents are teaching something, Krishna consciousness, which is the right way. I mean, actually, parents are so lost, they don't know how to bring up such kids. We don't have any other choice of sending to any other school except for such materialistic school.
No doubt. Therefore, we have to make the best use of a bad bargain. That means we have to be that much more careful and conscientious to create a very, very deeply sound spiritual atmosphere at home to counteract the effects of what's going to go into the child's mind through the rest of the day. In other words, your concern and your propaganda to bring about faith in God in Vedic culture has to be far more than theirs to take it away. Actually, most of the teachers in school, they're just very pious, simple, nice people just trying to help. But they don't understand that many of these subject matters, what their origin is, who has created it. So therefore, by your example, by your words, you have to create within that child's mind a very strong impression of faith in God and devotion to God. It's the only thing you can do. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.